Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is June the 9th, and we are in Yirmiyahu, beginning Perek Ches, Chapter 8, continuing with the Yirmiyahu's talk to Klal Yisrael, which we started already in Perek Zion, Chapter 7. This continues, and in the, as I mentioned in the email I sent to you, we will be getting to the Haftorah of Tisha B'Av, but it's not quite yet. In a few psukim, I'll mention when we get to that part where the Haftorah of Tisha B'Av begins. Bo'isahi, at that time, says Yirmiyahu, Numa Hashem Hashem says, Yotziu es atzmos malchi Yehuda. They, the enemy that will be attacking Yerushalayim, they will remove the bones of the kings of Yehuda, Ves atzmos sarav, and the bones of the king's cabinet, Ves atzmos hakonim, and the bones of the kohanim, Ves atzmos hanavim, and the bones of the prophets, Ves atzmos yoshvei Yerushalayim, and the bones of those who dwell in Yerushalayim, mikivrehem, from their graves. They'll take the bones out of their graves. Ushtachum la'shemesh v'layareach, and they will spread them out in front of the sun and in front of the moon. Ulchol tzva shamayim, and to all of the hosts of the heavens. What is the reason why Hashem will allow this to happen? Because it's mida keneged mida, it's measure for measure. Asher ahivum, that they loved those heavenly, those objects, meaning they love them as avodah zara, as idolatry. Vasher avodum, and they served them. Vasher holcha acharem, they went after them. Vasher derashum, they sought them out. Vasher yishtachavu lehem, they bowed down to them. So now their bones will be spread out in front of them. Lo yeyasfu v'lo yikaveru, they will not be gathered in, they will not be buried. L'domen al pnei ha'adama yu, they will be as domen. Domen means like fertilizer. They'll be on the face of the ground. They'll just be spread out. This is what would happen in the future because of the fact that they worshipped the sun, the moon, and the stars. Therefore, after death, their bones will be spread out in front of the sun, the moon, and the stars, and they will not have burial. The Gemara tells us that Hashem has the advantage over flesh and blood. A flesh and blood king needs to punish while a person is still alive. But Hashem does not have that limitation. Hashem can punish even after death. Not just the souls, but even the bodies of people can be punished even after death. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, V'nivchar maves mechayim, death will be better than life. L'chol ha'sheiris hanisharim, for all the remaining people. It will be better to be dead than alive. Min ha'mishpacha ha'ra'a hazos, from this evil family. B'chol ha'mekomos hanisharim, from all the places that they remain, asher hidachtim sham, that I will scatter them there. Num Hashem tzvakos, says Hashem. So the despite the fact that we're saying how bad it's going to be for those who have already passed away, but it's going to be worse for those who are still alive. But the Medrash says that the truth is that this doesn't read very well, because we just talked about how bad it's going to be for those who have already passed away, that their bones will be spread out in bizayon, they'll be degraded and spread all over the place in front of the sun and the moon, and then we say it's worse to be dead than alive. So the Gemara says, "V'nivchar maves mechayim," it would be better than dead than alive. Hashem is saying, for these people who are acting in such an evil manner, it'll be better for them to be dead than alive, because as long as they're alive, they're going to add to their averos and do more and more evil, and that's only going to be worse for them in the end. It's not good to be alive if a person is going to continually do evil and not end up doing teshuva. The only advantage in being alive is if a person will improve and do better. either they'll be doing mitzvos now or they'll be doing teshuva later. But somehow the advantage of being alive is to do better and to serve Hashem. But if the person is just going to do evil and evil and evil and evil and evil and that's it, so then they're better off dead. That way they won't do as bad. So that's what this pasuk means. The Gemara tells us that when Nebuchadnezzar was contemplating destroying the Beis HaMikdash, attacking Yerushalayim and destroying the Beis HaMikdash, he was not, he was hesitant to do it because he knew that Hashem, protects the Jewish people and often punishes those who attack the Jewish people. So the Gemara tells us that the nations of Ammon and Moab, who lived right near Eretz Yisrael, who were always our enemies, they sent word to Nebuchadnezzar, you should come and attack now. So Nebuchadnezzar said, I'm afraid of their God. So they said, no, their God has left them, don't worry about it, they're doing so many sins, there's no way that Hashem is going to protect them. And so Nebuchadnezzar sent back other excuses why he was concerned with the weather and food and things like that. And they kept saying no. They gave reasons why there was no reason not to come and attack. One of the things Nebuchadnezzar sent to them is, I have no place to lodge my army. I'm going to send this gigantic army against Jerusalem. Where are they going to stay? The weather is difficult. They're going to be out there in the middle of the wilderness. And where will they find shelter? So the nations of Ammon and Moab sent to Nebuchadnezzar, that's no problem. What you'll do is you'll go into their burial places. Typically, as the Gemara explains in several places, the way that they used to have family burial plots is different than what we have today. Today, people have burial plots typically in a graveyard, and you have plots that are next to each other. In their day, it was common to have an underground cave. And the way it would work is that there was a ramp dug into the ground. So you would actually, the ground would start to slope down, and it would kind of be a sharp slope down into a lower level, lower than the ground, than the surface. And then there would be a large cave dug out of the ground itself. And in that cave, there would be compartments dug into the walls of the cave where there would be where graves would be dug, and that's where there would be like a family plot. That where as people from the family would pass away, then that would be their plot that they would use. And in each cave, you could fit several members of the family. So it would be a long-term project to have such a cave. So they wrote to Nebuchadnezzar. They sent it to Nebuchadnezzar. Well, these caves that they have dug for their family burial plots, they're large and spacious, and they're perfect for housing soldiers. It's no worse than a World War I trench warfare. I mean, that was horrible, right? I mean, this at least has a roof over your head. So it's perfect for housing soldiers. The only problem is that there's corpses buried there. So just throw them out. And that's exactly what Nebuchadnezzar did. He came with his army, and they used the burial plots, these burial caves, as their lodging while they were laying siege to Yerushalayim. But of course the bodies got in the way. The corpses got in the way. So they took those and threw them out of their burial places. And so that is a fulfillment of this prophecy that the people had already died who were Rishayim, they were evil during their lifetimes, that they would even be degraded after death, not just their souls, whatever punishment Hashem had for them after death, but their bodies themselves would also be degraded after death in this manner. Pasuk Dalet, verse 4. V'amar ta'alem, and you, Yirmiyahu, should say to them, Ko amar Hashem, so says Hashem, Hayiplu v'lo yakumu, will they fall and not get up? Im yashuv v'lo yashuv, will they return and not return? It's a cryptic statement, cryptic sentence. So, as Rashi explains, the way one reads this is, Hayiplu v'lo yakumu, will they fall so far that they will not get up? They're going to be so evil, they're doing such evil that they're distancing themselves from the possibility of doing tshuva. They're going to go so far, they're never going to get up. They're never going to attempt to do tshuva. And not only that, im yashuv, if they do attempt to do tshuva, v'lo yashuv, but either this means their teshuva will be unsuccessful because they'll be so steeped in evil that they will not be able to successfully do teshuva, or it means that they may try to return, but Hashem will not return to them. That it will be too late already. The decree will already have been made, and the teshuva will not rescind the decree. Although, as we always say, tshuva always helps, but it does not necessarily reverse the decree. And it may be too late to reverse the decree, even though they may do tshuva, because there's so much evil, the decree is now set in stone. Pasukei, verse 5. Madua shovava ha'am hazeh. Why is this nation so wayward? Yerushalayim meshuvah nitzachas. Yerushalayim is a meshuvah from the word, not from the word teshuvah, but the word shovava, which means wayward. It's a waywardness that is nitzachas. Nitzachas means permanent or eternal. They're continuously wayward. Hechaziku batarmis, they've grabbed hold of falsehood. Me'anula shuv, they refuse to return. They're set in their evil ways. Hikshavti va'eshma, I have listened, I have heard, says Hashem. I'm listening to them how they talk. Lochein Yidaberu, they do not speak properly. Ein ish nicham al ra'aso, no man has remorse over his evil. Lamar to say, me'asisi, what did I do? There's no remorse. No one is thinking about what they might have done wrong. Kulo shav bimrutzasam, they are all wayward, they're running in their waywardness. Kisus shotef bamilchama, like a racing horse in a war. If you wanted to evoke an image of something going very, very fast, so we would think about racing cars, planes, things like that. But in their day, if you wanted to evoke an image of something that was moving very, very quickly, they were familiar with this, a horse that is racing in war. There was no greater time that no animal that they were used to seeing. There were wild animals, but a domesticated animal, the fastest animal that they were used to seeing was a horse. And in war, that's when the horses would really race, run really, really, really fast. So in order to bring up that image, so they're all running after their evil like a horse racing after the racing in a war. That's the image of something going very, very quickly. Pasuk Zion is fascinating. Gam chasidah v'ashamayim, also the chasidah, which is typically translated as a stork, it means a bird, a type of bird, in the heavens, yada mo'adah, it knows its time. Visor visis v'agur, those are three other types of birds. Shamru es eis vo'ana, they keep, they protect, they watch out for the time that they are supposed to come. V'ami, but my nation, lo yad'u, they don't know eis mishpat Hashem, the judgment of Hashem. This pasuk is referring to the migration of birds. Again, the Navi frequently will draw from that which was within people's frame of reference. And we are so far removed from nature because of our industrialized society. But even we are familiar with the migration of birds, we may not see it as much as it was noticed by people living in a more agricultural society. Right? But bird migration is something which was noticeable, obvious. People see it. People saw it all the time. Birds would move from one place to another depending on the season. So says Yirmiyahu, the birds know when they're supposed to fly and leave and come back. They know that. And Hashem says, my nation does not know the judgments of Hashem. What is the relevance between the migration of birds and the judgments of Hashem? We know more famously, we know this because it is from the Haftorah of Shabbos Chazon, of the Shabbos before Tisha B'Av. The first parak of Yeshaya says, Yada shor konehu vachamor evus be'olav, that the bull knows its owner and the donkey knows the trough of its master. So then the pasuk goes on to say, Yisrael lo yada, but the Jews, they don't know who their master is. Amilo hisponon, my nation does not reflect or consider what is going on. We're being compared to those animals that they know instinctively who their master is and where their bread is buttered. They know where their food is coming from, but we don't pay attention to it. So here it's a similar idea that the Navi is saying these birds, they know when to migrate. They know when to leave, but we don't know the judgments of Hashem. What does a judgment have to do with migration? The reason birds migrate is because of the seasonal need to migrate. Whatever it is, whether it's a lack of food or whether the weather is too cold, whatever the issue is, that's why the birds need to travel from place to place, because otherwise they'd be in trouble. If they stayed where they were, either it would get too cold for them or there wouldn't be any food for them and they would perish. So it's built into their systems that when the season changes and they would be in danger if they stayed where they were, then they move from place to place. So we are aware of the fact that Hashem has judgments, and that those judgments can also give us a very, very difficult life, or even worse. And the judgments can affect our food, the judgments can affect our quality of life, and even life itself. And yet, we ignore it. We continue in our ways. If we would have the sense of the birds, if we even had bird brains, if we did that, then we would say, we don't want, chas v'shalom, our food to be impacted. We don't want our livelihoods to be impacted. We don't want our protection to be impacted. So we would therefore stop doing averos. But we just ignore it. We don't pay attention to the judgments of Hashem. One can, of course, ask, both here and in the more well-known pasuk of Yada Shor Koneu about the bull and the donkey, one can ask, there it's instinctive. The animals know these things instinctively. It requires us to think. There's a free will involved over here. It's not a fair comparison because it's not instinctive for us. So I was discussing this morning with my chavrusa, Dr. Aaron Feldman. He told me that he once heard about this question, that it is our natural instinct of a Jew to recognize Hashem as the one who is in charge of us, the one who takes care of us, where our food comes from, our protection comes from. That's the natural state of a Jew. We ruin it by making the poor decisions, by acting in a way that distances ourselves from Hashem. But as a default, we are like those animals that instinctively would know that Hashem is the one that with the source of everything, and there are judgments in place if a person does not follow Hashem. That's instinctive for us, and we then move away from that natural instinct. It's a nice presentation for that idea. Pasuk has verse 8. Echa somru chachamim anachnu. How can you say we are wise people? We like to think of ourselves as wise people. Jews are known as wise people, and we like to think of it that way. So Hashem says, how can you call yourselves wise people? V'saras Hashem itanu, when we have the Torah of Hashem. After all, that's what makes us wise. We have the Torah of Hashem. How can you be so proud of that, says Hashem? Achein hinei l'sheker asah. But now you're behaving with falsehood. Eight sheker sofrim, the pen of falsehood for the scribes. That's a reference to the false prophets having their false prophecies written down and committed to parchment. And so how can you be so proud of being wise and having the Torah when there's so much falsehood among you? Hovishu chachamim, the wise people have, literally means they've either become ashamed or dried up. It means that they've become spoiled. Chatu, they have been broken. Vayilachedu, and they were captured. Hinei vidvar Hashem ma'asu, behold, the word of Hashem they have rejected. V'chachmas melahem, and what worth is their wisdom? They have no wisdom anymore. The wisdom only comes from following Hashem's word. If we don't follow Hashem's word, chas v'shalom, our wisdom is not worth anything. Lachain, therefore, Hashem says, with the scathing punishment that He visits upon us, Etainus nesheihem la'achem, I will give their wives to other people, Sidoseihem li'orshim, I'll give their fields to those who will conquer them, Kimi katon ve'ad gadol, because from the youngest to the oldest, Kulo botzea botza, everybody is taking money that is ill-gotten, that is not theirs. Minavi vad kohen, go from the prophets to the kohanim. Kulo oseh shaker, everybody is doing evil. A reference here again to the false prophets, that they are all doing evil. Va yirapu es shever bas ami al nikala. And they claim to heal. Va yirapu, they claim to heal the brokenness, that which is broken of my nation, easily. The false prophets are saying, oh, don't worry about it. It's all going to be fine. It's all going to make it. It's all going to come out okay in the end. Don't worry. Things are going to be fine. Bavel is not going to attack. They're not going to hurt us. We're going to be protected. Lamar, they say, shalom, shalom. It's all fine. It's all peace. The ain shalom. But really, there is no peace. That is not the case, says Yirmiyahu. We're really in a very, very bad place. Don't believe those prophets who are claiming that everything is fine. Hovishu, again, they've been ashamed, or they've been spoiled or lost. Kisoiva asu, for they have done that which is abominable. Gambosh lo yevoshu, they also are not ashamed, they're not embarrassed. Vihikalim lo yado, they don't know about shame or embarrassment. The people are not ashamed of their actions. Lachin, therefore, yiplu vanoflim, they will fall very far. Be'ez pekudasam, at the time that they are remembered, which means that Hashem remembers their deeds, which means Hashem decides to act upon their deeds, yikashlu, they will stumble, Amar Hashem says, Hashem. The one of the most basic steps for teshuva is for us, for people to be ashamed of their actions. That's one of the most basic needs. In order to do teshuva, one has to recognize that what we've done is wrong, and one has to feel ashamed. I shouldn't have behaved that way. It's not appropriate. It's not becoming of me to behave in that way. And one has to feel that shame. And here he's saying, no one feels ashamed. Just like before he said, no one is asking, what did I do? No one seems to care. They're just going on and on and on with their evil. And of course, it's spiraling downward and further away from Hashem. Pasuk Yud Gimel verse 13 begins the Haftorah for Tisha B'Av. From this Pasuk, Asof Asifim, that begins the Haftorah for Tisha B'Av. The Haftorah for Tisha B'Av starts here, Perek Ches Pasuk Yud Gimel, chapter 8, verse 13. It goes to the end of this chapter and then into the next chapter. It goes all the way into Perek Ches, into chapter 9, until 23, through 23, through Pasuk Yud Gimel. Right. Yes.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
So, were there any good people in this time? or was it just primarily, because before you talked about the the leaders and the bones of the leaders and the priests. And now that could have been that they were good before then and they were already dead. But I'm just so curious because it's so, sounds like everyone.
Right. So clearly it's not everyone. Like you're pointing out, well said, it's clearly not everyone. And Yirmiyahu is generalizing over here. There was more evil than good. And that's why the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So clearly it's not everyone. As we mentioned at the beginning of last week's shiur, it's hard to place when this is being said. On the one hand, Yirmiyahu seems to have freedom to move around. So that would suggest that it was at the time of Yoshiyahu, when Yoshiyahu was king, he was a tzaddik, and most people were tzaddikim at that time. So that's difficult, because if they were all tzaddikim, or most of them were tzaddikim, then this doesn't seem to fit. It could have been during the time of Yehoyakim, or Tzidkiyahu. The thing is that during both their reigns, Yirmiyahu was locked up for most of the time that they were kings. There were times in both their reigns that Yirmiyahu was free to walk around. So it could have been during their time, and certainly the tone of the prophecy seems to fit better with those two kings. Now, those two kings, we've mentioned before that they were diametrically opposed. Yehoyakim was a terrible Rasha, a really, really terrible person, and so were his entourage. The people that were around him were terrible people, but the rank and file of the Jewish people during his reign were tzaddikim. They were good. On the other hand, Tzidkiyahu was the reverse. He himself was a tzaddik, but he was dealing with a very, very challenging situation where almost everybody else was evil. So the reference before to the kings and their bones, etc., that would seem to refer to the evil kings, which would be Yehoyakim, and perhaps the evil kings that came before Yirmiyahu. There were evil kings before him, before Yoshiyahu, his father. Amon was, the Gemara describes that Amon did is just, I mean, it's just disgusting what the Gemara says that Amon did. So, it could be referring to previous kings who were evil. All the people, it sounds then that it's a reference primarily to Tzidkiyahu's time when the people were evil. But again, I don't know for sure what the time frame is of this nevuah. So we're going to take it as a generalization referring to the Rishayim, and whether that is the Rishayim of Yirmiyahu's time at this moment when he's speaking, or if it's from previous generations or future generations, that I don't know. But clearly, it's a reference to those who are doing the evil. There never was a time when everybody was evil. That just never happened. It never happened. Not in our entire history was it that all Jewish people were evil. Even most Jewish people were evil. That's never happened. There's been some very, very bad times, but never to the point where everybody is just terribly, terribly evil.
So maybe it's just that the evil was very bad.
That could be. And also remember that sometimes those who are righteous are taken to task for not speaking out against those who are evil, which is that's a difficult thing for us to relate to, because it's so hard today to we've talked about this, how people are very, very fragile and being critical doesn't generally work. But there is a point where Hashem does expect those who are righteous to speak out about the evil. There is a point where that happens. So I'm not sure exactly when that point is in our day and age, but certainly in Yirmiyahu's time, that was expected.
Thank you.
Pasuk Gimel, verse 13. Asof Asifim. This, the Haftorah for Tisha B'Av, just a few more notes about that. First of all, it is read with the Eicha tune. So it is a mournful tune. As I'm reading it now, I'm thinking of the Eicha tune, because that's the way it's read in Shul on Tisha B'Av morning. So that's something to keep in mind about that. And it is read in the morning of Tisha B'Av. There are two haftaras on Tisha B'Av. There's the morning and there's the afternoon. On a fast day, we read a Haftorah in the afternoon as well. The afternoon Haftorah of Tisha B'Av is the same as all other fast days, which is Dirshu Hashem Behimatzo, Sikar Hashem, when he can be found. But the morning is this Haftorah over here. I'm sorry, I said it a little bit incorrectly. On a fast day, a typical fast day, let's say Shiva Asar B'Tammuz or Asar B'Teves, there is no Haftorah in the morning. There's only a Haftorah in the afternoon. There's Torah reading in the morning. The afternoon, there is Torah reading and also a Haftorah. So the afternoon of Tisha B'Av is the same as any other fast day. It's the same Torah reading and the same Haftorah. But in the morning of Tisha B'Av, the Torah reading is different, and there is a Haftorah, which doesn't normally happen on a fast day, and that's this one over here that we read. So, as you would expect, if we read it on Tisha B'Av, this is going to be pretty, I don't know what the word we'll use, upsetting. This is not going to be a fun thing to read. Remember, they could have picked any part of Yirmiyahu to read on Tisha B'Av morning, and they chose this next several, the next several psukim. So, I'm just to anticipate, it's not going to be fun. Pasuk Gimel, verse 13. I will just say before, just to not to scare everybody, it's not going to be as graphic as last week's. It's not like that. It's not going to have those kind of references. Pasuk Gimel, verse 13. Asof asifem num Hashem. Hashem says, I will gather them in. This does not mean gather them in a loving way. This means I will take them away from this world. I'll gather them into their deaths. Ein anavim bagefen. There are no grapes on the vine. Ve'ein te'inim about te'ina. And there are no figs on the fig tree. Ve'ha'ale navel. And the leaves are wilted. Meaning there's not going to be any food. All the food is going to be gone. Everything is going to be taken away by the enemy. There's going to be intense hunger, intense famine. V'atein lahem ya'avrum. I gave them mitzvos, I gave them the Torah, and they transgressed. And therefore, there will be intense famine, intense hunger. This happens because of the siege. And during the siege of Yerushalayim, the Gemara describes just how terrible it was, that there really was nothing to eat. Just imagine this, many, many, many people crammed together in one city and very, very little food. Unfortunately, we have a more recent example of that in the ghettos in the beginning of World War II. Al ma anachnu yoshvim. Why are we sitting here? The people are going to say. Hey, asfu v'navo el arei hamivtzar. Let us gather together and come to the fortified cities, v'nid b'asham, and we'll be silent there. Meaning that there's no point in just sitting out in the non-fortified cities where the enemy will just kill us. We may as well go to the fortified cities where at least there we'll have a little bit of time that we can survive. Ki Hashem Elokeinu hadimanu. Because Hashem, our God, He has made us silent. Vayashkenu meirosh, and He's given us a bitter drink. Ki chatanu laHashem, for we have sinned to Hashem. The people at this point are going to eventually realize that they've sinned, and that's why this is all happening. But the Navi is saying it will be too late. As again, I want to reiterate, it's never too late to do teshuva, but it might be too late to reverse the decree. The decree still may be happening. And that's what he's saying over here. It will be too late to reverse the decree. Unfortunately, the decree will not be reversed at that point. By the time the people are ready to do teshuva, the teshuva is good, but the terrible decree is still going to happen. Kavei l'shalom. They will hope for peace. Ve'ein tov. But there will not be any good. Le'es marpei. They're going to hope for being healed. V'neva asa. But instead, there will be confusion. There will be sickness and confusion. Midan nishma nachras susav. From dun will be heard the nachras susav. Nachras, I don't know the English word for it. When a horse snort. Okay, right. Thank you. Not when it bray or whinnies or whatever the word is for the horse's sound. No, when it snort, the snort of the horse. So from dun, they could hear the snorting of the horse, of the horses, that, you know, there's going to be so many horses in the enemy's army that they'll hear it all the way from Dun down to Yerushalayim. They'll be able to hear it. Dun is all the way in the north of Eretz Yisrael, and they'll be able to hear it. Mikol mitzalos abirav, from the sound of, this is the, whatever the word is, whinning, braying of the horses.
Neighing
of the horses, thank you. Ra'asha kol ha'aretz, the whole land will shake. That's how many horses there will be. For us, this would be the same fear that we would have if hearing the rumble of the enemy armor as it rumbles towards the city. That must have been a terrifying thing. We've, Baruch Hashem, I've never experienced that, but to be in a situation where there's a war and the army that is supposed to be protecting us has fallen apart, and then you hear that the enemy armor coming towards the city, there's nothing you can do about it. That's what it was over here as well. They have come, they've consumed the entire land, which means all the food. They've consumed the city and everybody dwelling in it. Everybody will be consumed by this enemy army. Midan, the pasuk tells us, from Dun. This is a reference to the Avodah Zarah that was in Dun. One of the things that Yeravam ben Nevat did, he was the first of the northern kings when the kingdom was split. And he started off as a tzaddik, but he ended up being a big rasha. He lost his portion in the world to come. So he did not want the people to go to Yerushalayim. He was afraid he would lose control over them. And so he set up two calves, one in Dun and one in Be'er Sheva, that people should go and worship those rather than one in Dun and one in, not in Be'er Sheva, one in Dun and one in... Okay, I'm confused about it. We'll leave it at that. We'll have to get that corrected. But the northern one was in Dun, and that's where the people would go instead of going to Yerushalayim. So that was an Avodah Zarah. It was an idolatry, and therefore there is evil that comes from Dun. The pasuk tells us in Parashas Lech Lecha that when Avraham Avinu was chasing after the four kings, when he had defeated them, and now he was running after them, it says, Vayirdof ad Dun. He chased them until Dun. There was no Dun in his day. Dun wasn't born yet. Dun is one of the Shvatim, one of the tribes. But it means he chased them until the territory that would eventually be the territory of Dun. The Chazal tell us, Rashi says it over there, the reason why he was unable to chase them after that is because he became weak, because that is where the Avodah Zarah, the idolatry, would eventually be. And here you have the same reference that it is from there that the evil comes from. Pasuk Yud-Zayin, verse 17. Ki hinani mishaleach bachem nechashim tzif onim. I am sending to you snakes that are tzif onim. Tzif onim means a type of snake that is an elderly snake, which I referenced in my email to you. We'll talk about it in a minute. Asher ein lahem lochash, they do not have a whispering. That means there's no way to charm these snakes. V'nishku eschem, they will bite you, Nu'um Hashem says Hashem. Snakes can be charmed. I don't think I've ever personally seen a snake charmer. I'm sure some of you have, and I'm sure it's fascinating to see. But snakes can be charmed, but only if they can hear, because that's how they're charmed. They're charmed with the way that the snake charmer either speaks to or uses music and is able to charm the snake. Snakes, a certain type of snake, lives a very long time. When it gets old, and the Gemara says when it reaches 70 years, it can no longer hear. Once it can't hear, it can't be charmed. And therefore, it's a very, very dangerous snake, because there's no way to stop it if you don't kill it. And so, that's what Hashem is saying. I'm going to send against you these deaf snakes, these elderly snakes, 70-year-old snakes, that there's no lachash. There is no way to whisper. There's no snake whisperer. You can't charm it. It will bite you, says Hashem. Mavligisi aleyagon. Mavligisi means I wanted to strengthen myself. I wanted to deal with the problems I already have. That's what I wanted to do. This is what the Bnei Yisrael are going to say. I wanted to kind of like just deal with the issues that are already bothering me. Alei agon, but instead I have even more sorrow. Alai libi davai, on me my heart is again sorrowful or is groaning. Hine kol shavas bas ami me'eretz marchakim. Behold the sound, Hashem says, of the crying out of my nation from faraway land. Hashem says they're going to be dragged into galus, into exile, and they'll be crying out. Hashem ein b'tzion. Is Hashem not in Sion? Is Hashem not there? That all this time you never cried out to me when you were in Sion? You have to go to Gullus in order to cry out to me? Why didn't you cry out to me when you were still in Yerushalayim? Was I not there? Was Hashem not in Sion? That only now, after you're dragged into Gullus, now you cry out to me? Imalka ein ba, if there's no king in Sion, when there was a king, when we were still there, why didn't you cry out to me at that time? Madua hichisuni b'psilehem, why have they angered me with their idols, v'havlei nechar, with their foreign narishkeit, that's really what the word means, with their foreign nothingness. Avar kotsir kolakoyetz, the harvest has passed, the summer has ended. V'anachnu lo noshanu, we were not saved. Chazal tell us that the Bnei Yisrael at this time, when Nebuchadnezzar attacked, the Bnei Yisrael were waiting for help. They had made a treaty with the Mitzrim, with the Egyptians, and they were waiting for the Egyptians to come and help them, to save them from Nebuchadnezzar. And they waited and waited. Remember, this is all in the summertime. The Shiva Asar v'Tammuz is when the walls were broken into, and then Tisha B'Av is when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. They waited. They thought that, oh, the Egyptians will come. They're busy with the harvest. That's why they haven't come yet in the springtime. They're still harvesting their grain. So we're just waiting for that, and then they will come to save us. But the springtime passed, the harvest passed, and then the summer passed, meaning the bulk of the summer passed, and we were not saved, and instead Nebuchadnezzar destroyed us. The Mitzrim never showed up to save us. The Egyptians never came to save us. Al shever bas ami hashbarti. Hashem says, because of the breaking of my nation, I have become broken. Chazal say, if the Pasuk didn't say this, we couldn't say it. Hashem is broken? How can you say such a thing? But the Navi means that it is as if that Hashem himself is broken. Since we are his children and we were broken, it is as if he himself, kiviyachol, so to speak, was broken. Kadarti shama hechazi kasni. Kadarti means I have been made dark. The light is gone from me. Shama hechazi kasni, and desolation has grabbed hold of me. This is Hashem speaking, so to speak. There's desolation for Hashem. Hatsari in Gilad. Is there no medicine in Gilad? Gilad was on the other side of the Jordan River, and it was a place where they cultivated herbs for medicine. And since we are considered to be sick at this time and ill, so the Navi says, are there no herbs? Are there no medicines in Gilad? Im rofei ein sham? Are there no doctors there? Ki madua lo al saru chas basami? How come the wounds of my nation have not been healed? The wounds just fester and they don't heal. There are no medicines that are saving them from their sickness. It's getting worse and worse and worse. Before I read the last pasuk, I just want to mention to you that the Egyptians did not show up. The Gemara tells us that the Egyptians did start on their way to come help us. They got into boats to cross the Mediterranean and come to Israel by boat. Either that, or they came to cross the Yamsuf. Either way, the Red Sea. But they were in boats crossing a body of water. And as they were crossing, Hashem made it that there would be these objects floating in the water that they noticed, like a whole bunch of objects floating in the water. And they noticed these objects and they didn't know what they were. They looked funny. So they said, what are those objects? And they said to themselves, oh, you know what those objects must be? Those must be the remains of our ancestors who were drowned when they were attacking the Jews. It's because of the Jews that our ancestors were drowned. And then they said to each other, and we're going to help the Jews? Maybe not. And they turned around and went back to Egypt. So they never showed up because Hashem, although we had made an alliance with the Egyptians, which sounds funny to us because we always think of Mitzrayim as Egypt as an enemy, but think about world history. It's not uncommon that nations that used to be at odds with each other became allies. Think of the United States and Great Britain. Right? They were terrible enemies with each other until the 20th century, then they became allies. So it's not an uncommon thing for enemies to then become allies and allies to become enemies. But Hashem reminded the Egyptians of why they would not want to be allies with the Jews, and they turned around and went back. Pasuk Chavakim, verse 23. This is still Hashem speaking. Mi tein roshi mayim. Who would make my head, who would give my head water? Veini mekar dima. And my eyes be the source of tears. Meaning, I would like to cry and cry and cry over the loss of my children. And it would take so many tears. There's not enough liquid in my eyes to cry as much as I want to cry. So who would give that my head be full of water to be able to cry and my eyes be the source of tears? Ve'evke yomam v'alayla, and I will cry day and night, eis chalalei v'asami, the corpses of my nation. Says the Medrash, who is this referring to? Who's going to cry day and night? It says the Medrash, it can't be a human being. Human beings have to eat. Human beings have to sleep. A human being can't cry 24 hours a day. It's not possible. Who could cry 24/7? Only Hashem can cry 24 hours a day. He doesn't need to eat. He doesn't need to sleep. And therefore he can cry. And therefore this pasuk is not referring to a human being. It is referring to Hashem himself, kiviyachol, so to speak. Then he is saying, I would cry over the corpses of my nation day and night. The Gemara tells us, the Medrash says, that when the Jews were taken into Gullus, into exile in Bavel, they were dragged to Bavel, and they were, of course, very, very hurt and upset, and they were at their wits' end, and they began to cry. And whenever they began to cry, the enemy, the Babylonians who were forcing them in their march to Bavel, if they would begin to cry, they would begin to strike them on the neck. They would begin to whip them or hit them on the neck and force them to stop crying. They told them, you should be happy. You're going to Bavel, to the great place, Babylonia. You don't cry when you come to our great country. And therefore, they struck them if they attempted to cry. And the Jews were not given permission to cry. They had to hold back their tears or they would get beaten for crying. So they were not able to cry. Imagine that, how bad it was, but they couldn't cry. But we know there was a person who was not under the control of the custom of the Babylonians. Only one person was free to do as he wished. And that was Yirmiyahu himself. We will learn later on that when Nebuchadnezzar, it's actually Psukim in Yirmiyahu, which we'll have later, I can't tell you when we're going to get there because it's at the very end, right before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, that at that time, Nebuchadnezzar gives instructions to Nebuzaradan. Nebuzaradan is going to be the Rav Tabachim, the chief butcher or chief executioner of Nebuchadnezzar. And he will be the one who is tasked to kill Jews and take the remnant and drag them into Gullus and to Bavel in chains. So Nebuzaradan will be given direct instructions from Nebuchadnezzar do not harm your miyahu. In fact, you should protect him. And whatever he says, you should do. Whatever he wants, you should do. Not in terms of protecting the rest of the Jewish people. Yirmiyahu, he didn't mean that Yirmiyahu could say, don't hurt the Jews. He meant, wherever he wants to go, you let him go. Wherever he wants to, whatever he asks for, you give him. He is under the protection of me personally, which was an unbelievable miracle that happened. There was no reason why Nebuchadnezzar should be protecting Yirmiyahu, but he does. So we will learn about that later on. When we get to that part of Yirmiyahu, fascinating story about Yirmiyahu during that time of the destruction, as the everything is falling apart around all the Jewish people, he and only he is singled out for protection. So Yirmiyahu, therefore, had the luxury, so to speak, to cry, which he certainly did. He was very, very, very sad and upset over what was happening to his people, and he cried. So the Medrash says that, so to speak, the Jews who were being dragged into Golos and Yirmiyahu made a pact. Human beings can't cry 24 hours. It's not possible. We have to eat, we have to sleep. But they made a pact. They said, Yirmiyahu, you cry during the day, because we can't. If we do, we'll be beaten. We'll cry at night when they let us go, when we're in our whatever, we're lying down, we're supposed to be sleeping. So that's when we'll cry. You cry during the day, we'll cry at night. That doesn't necessarily mean they actually had that conversation, but that was what happened. Yirmiyahu cried for the Jews during the day when he was the only one who could cry, and then at night, the only time they could cry, the Jews cried. And Hashem says, Yirmiyahu is crying during the day, the Jews are crying at night, I will cry day and night. Hashem is not, kiviyachol, so to speak, not happy about what is happening over here. This is not what Hashem wants, but he knows, obviously, Hashem does what is best, but it's not what he would want to have happened. He did not want this to take place. The Medrash also says that when, we all know this to be true, that chas v'shalom, when a person loses a loved one, then the pain is very, very intense at first, and then it begins to wane over time. That's really a bracha, that the pain begins to wane. And we know that there's a bracha, that there is shikha, there is forgetting, that after a year, that the intensity of the loss diminishes. That is a bracha from Hashem. But we all know that when something happens that reminds the person of their loss, then that intensity can come back in a very, very powerful way, in a very, very strong way, and a person can suddenly burst into tears because there was something that reminded them of the person who is gone. And it's a very, very painful experience that happens to really everybody who loses a loved one. It happens once in a while. So the Medrash says, so to speak, kiviyachol, this is what was happening to Hashem. Because every morning, when it was time to bring the Karban Tamid, when it was time to bring the daily sacrifice, Hashem would, so to speak, come to the Beis HaMikdash expecting the Karban, and there's no Beis HaMikdash. There's no Karban. And the intensity of the loss, again, we're characterizing Hashem with emotions that He doesn't have. We're trying to use human emotion to explain what is going on. But he's faced with no Karban, no Beis HaMikdash, at a time when he's expecting it, and all of a sudden that intensity of the loss, so to speak, hits him, and he cries. That's the morning, that's the daytime. And then in the evening, we come to the late afternoon, towards evening, it's time for the Karban Shel Bein Arbaim, the Tamid Shel Bein Arbaim, the sacrifice of the afternoon. And Hashem comes to the Beis HaMikdash, waiting for that Karban, and there's no Beis HaMikdash, there's no Karban, there's no people! And the intensity strikes him, so to speak, and he cries. That's the idea we're trying to bring out over here in this pasuk. Hashem says, I cry day and night. I am reminded of my loss. I'm reminded of those people, my precious children, who have gone into galus. And that hits HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he cries. It's hard not to cry ourselves when we think about this. The HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not a human being. He doesn't have emotions. Not the way we do, not in that way. But we can't understand Hashem in any other way other than to use human traits and human emotions. Just as we say the hand of Hashem and the arm of Hashem, we say those things, even though, of course, that's not real, not in that way. So the when we say that he cries day and night, we're trying to bring out that just as we would cry when we are faced with an intense reminder of our loss, that is the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, is reacting. Which means, as the Gemara tells us over and over again, that there is regularly a baskol, a nevuah, that comes out in various places in Eretz Yisrael. Regularly a baskol comes out from Hashem, which only those who are really plugged in can hear it. And the baskol says, Hashem says, woe to me that I've sent my children into Golus. Hashem has remorse, so to speak. That doesn't mean that he regrets doing it. He did what he had to do, but he is, so to speak, not happy about it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, so to speak, waiting for the day when he can return us to our land and rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. This is not where he wants to be. It's not where he wants us to be. Unfortunately, our behavior tipped his hand and he had to send us into Golus. We will continue with Perek Tes, the chapter 9, next week. And as mentioned, we're still in the middle of the Haftorah of Tisha B'Av, and Mirza Hashem, we will complete it next week and hopefully finish that next week's the chapter as well. I'm going to give you the schedule right now.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.